guess it's been about 4 years, huh?
And a late point.
Huh?
And a very late point.
Never travel on a Thursday afternoon.
That's what Prabhupada said.
That's right. Disobey the perfect acharya, get in trouble. What you have to do is you have to start your journey at least in the morning. You move your bags from one room to the next room or something.
Get to the car.
But I don't know. There was problems that, of all things, you'd never guess it. Their computer went down, so they couldn't. Computers go down? How is that possible?
At the airport,
their computers went down, and they couldn't load the luggage. So we were about an hour there. You're right. And they say, they apologize profusely, but they never fix it. And then en route, somebody brought their big terrier dog in a cage, and somehow the dog got out of the cage and ran around the luggage compartment, was screaming and yelling. The whole flight he was screaming and yelling. And when they reached Stockholm, the luggage people didn't want to go into the luggage compartment because they were afraid of this big terrier. So that took another hour. Was a joke.
Even the dog was in the luggage compartment. You heard him?
Yeah.
You couldn't see him, right?
No.
He didn't know. Oh my goodness.
He's down below. I'm surprised he didn't freeze to death or something. Pretty cold down there. So, it was Murphy's Law. What could go wrong did go wrong. Bizarre. Consequently, we didn't get in till midnight. And then after a long philosophical discussion, we took rest late. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya Narangchaiva narottamam
Devim
sarasatim
vyasam
Tato jayam udhirayat Nastapraeshu abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya
Bhagavati Uttama
Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. This morning we're reading from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 19, entitled King Prithu's 100 Horse Sacrifices. Text number 35. Kratur viramatam esha deveshu
Duravagraha Dharma Vyatikro Yatra Pakandair Indranirmitai Kratur Viramatamesha Devesho Duravagraha Dharma Vyatikaro Yatra Pakandair Indranirmitai Kratur Viramatamesha Devesho Duravagraha Dharma Vyatikaro Yatra Pakandair Indranirmitai
The sacrifice Viramatam Let it stop Eshaha This Devishu Amongst the demigods Duravagraha Addiction to unwanted things. Dharma Vyatikaraha. Violation of religious principles. Yatra. Where? Pakandai. By sinful activities. Indra. By the King of Heaven, Nirmitai, manufactured. Translation. Lord Brahma continued, stop the performance of these sacrifices, for they have induced Indra to introduce so many irreligious aspects. You should know very well that even amongst the demigods, there are many unwanted desires. Responsively, please repeat. Lord Brahma continued. Stop the performance of these sacrifices. For they have induced Indra to introduce so many irreligious aspects. You should know very well that even amongst the demigods, there are many unwanted desires. There are many competitors in ordinary business affairs, and the Karmakanda chapters of the Vedas sometimes cause competition and envy amongst karmis. A karmi must be envious because he wishes to enjoy material pleasures to their fullest extent. That is the material disease. Consequently, there is always competition amongst karmis, either in ordinary business affairs or in the performance of yajna. Lord Brahma's purpose was to end the competition between Lord Indra and Maharaj Prithu. Because Maharaj Prithu was a great devotee and incarnation of God, he was requested to stop the sacrifices so that Indra might not further introduce irreligious systems which are always followed by criminal-minded people. Kratur viramatamesha deveshu duravagraha Dharma Vyatikaro Yatra Pakandair Indra Nirmitai
Lord Brahma continued, stop the performance of these sacrifices, for they have induced Indra to introduce so many irreligious aspects. You should know very well that even amongst the demigods, there are many unwanted desires. Just the other day, I was listening to a lecture of Srila Prabhupada. He was talking on Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, first verse. And he told the whole story, or he set the scene for the Mahabharata war. And he mentioned this very point, how the material world means envy and greed and competition. And the spiritual world is, of course, the opposite of this. So he was talking in relationship to the Kauravas and other great souls, both within the Kaurava family and on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and how there was envy amongst them. And in fact, sometimes the Mahabharata is described as being very relevant for many people in this age, especially at this time, because it's full of sex, violence, intrigue, all the good things, you know. We have been flying. Well, I guess we haven't stopped for the last year or so. Just dropping down here and there. But so on the plane, invariably they have movies and Mayapur watches them. I never watch them and he tells me about it. But always, they can't have a movie. I've seen maybe one or two, that, and they were probably dollars. I don't know. They can't have a movie without... It could be a wonderful storyline. They could have a good message to tell. But they've got to throw in some sex and violence, or people just won't get excited about it. In fact, I sometimes wonder whether they go there just, you know, if they just had some movies where the people were just, you know, their favorite stars were just up there having sex and beating each other up on the screen and could forget the rest of the cinematography, because that's really what people go for. It's very sad. And we have been doing this silly business for a long time. Brahmanda Brahmite. We've been wandering throughout the Brahmanda. And, of course, we've been inhabiting different bodies, trying to experience different varieties of sense gratification. Mostly it has been of this variety, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And when we come to the human form of life, which is meant for self-realization, Brahma Jigyasa, even realization is hoped for, but at least we should inquire ask the right questions, try to solve the right problems in our life. We have so many problems. There is an eating problem. There is a sleeping problem. There is a problem of occupation. There is a problem of family. There's so many problems. What's our primary problem? If we don't solve it, everything will be wasted. Is it if we don't have three children, our life will be totally wasted? Or if we don't get our own house with five stories and three televisions and four cars, what is our primary problem that we want to solve? Life is short. It's so short. And human life is an opportunity which we get very rarely. Only a small percentage, something like, 400,000 species out of 8 million. And only a few are civilized, so that they have the intelligence, they have the determination to pursue spiritual life. A very small percentage, less than 5%. So we have this opportunity, and it's not, you can't take it for granted, because you may not get this opportunity again if you waste it. It is very special. I remember, and sometimes it takes an experience. Prabhupada was on the same tape, was talking about how Dekha, actually in Bengali, Dekha Suna. Suna means hearing. Dekha, I don't think it was Dekha, but something like that. Dekha is more Hindi. But by seeing and by hearing, we acquire knowledge. An intelligent person can understand by hearing. Ascharyavat paschati kaschit enam. Ascharyavat vadati tataiva chanya. Ascharyavat chanam anya shrinoti. By hearing, you can understand. Intelligent person. But a less intelligent person has to see or experience, then hopefully they will learn. So it's very rare to find someone who can understand just by hearing. Usually it's a combination of both. We hear, we're not quite faithful, we experience, and then we realize that what we heard was good. So this devotee, older devotee, he got married, and he was a devotee, but not so conventional. Anyway, he was he's doing very well now. But when he first got married, he was into this thing of delivering his own child. And he actually did that. He delivered his wife's child. He pulled the child out of the womb. And I suppose there was a midwife right there also. But he was so excited after it. You know, it's, wow, I delivered my own child. Life is so beautiful, you know, it's so wonderful. Such an amazing thing, life. It's true. We take it for granted, but the very fact that we're alive and that we think and feel and will, this is wonderful. It's really something, God's gift. It's human form of life, we can experience everything to the fullest. All of our senses are active and linked to a potentially intelligent brain. But if we misuse the chance, if we use it for animal activities, then what is the value? We're kripana. Surely we are misers. If we get something valuable with instructions how to use it, I mean, I've done that, I must admit. Being passionate and impatient, and you know, you get some new technology, some little toy, and you know, Americans love their toys. Montague agrees with me. There's a t-shirt that I almost bought it. I wish I had, actually. Saw it in America a few years ago. He who has the most toys at the time of death wins. It's the purpose of life to get toys. Right, Brahma? We've got to have our toys. Little boys need their toys. So... I've gotten a new little toy, and impatient, I would not read the instruction book. That I know how to work this here. You just push this button and press this. Broken. Please take to repair service. You always mess it up. So we've got this human form of life, and we don't know how to use it. We're misusing it because we're not hearing from the right source. We're not analyzing, why am I here, what is my purpose, and remaining focused on that. We're, as Arjuna, now this was 5,000 years ago when people were much better off, believe it or not. Much better off. Much better off than we are today. There was, you know, there were actually a lot of sane people. And a reasonably manageable population. And even though it was the beginning of Kali Yuga, but still, Arjuna was emperor of the whole world. He was trained in martial arts to such a degree that there was practically nothing he couldn't do with his weapons. And that means mind control. It means being able to control your senses. And Arjuna did practice austerity to please Duryodhana. So even he said, Chanchala hi mana Krishna. Even he admitted that at times his mind became very restless, turbulent, obstinate. So what to speak of us? Our minds can be very distracted. It's so easy. There's so many sense objects. There are some people that are focused. The people who seem to be focused are the ones who seem to be promoting the evils of Kali Yuga the most. For someone who is trying to practice simple living and high thinking, for someone who is trying to understand the absolute truth, for someone who's trying to practice a little divine austerity, Dibyam, the poet Dibyam, it's discouraging, because it's almost like hoof and mouth disease is about everywhere. You know, in England, it's hoof and mouth diseases. And I'm sure everybody here knows about it because it's in all the papers all over Europe. And farmers whose herd gets hoof and mouth disease, they're quarantined. They can't go out of their farm. Their children can't go to school. They're completely quarantined because they might be carrying it. So if you want to, sincerely, you want to cultivate spiritual knowledge, it's almost like you're quarantined. Because the moment you go outside, you won't infect them. That would be nice. But they'll infect you with their irreverent, irresolute sense gratification, their propagation of their cult of sense gratification. So one of the activities of non-devotees is to support their sense gratification by various philosophies. I'm sure you all know the fivefold material miseries, right? I'm sure you've been told it before. Birth, death, disease, old age, and new age. Fivefold material miseries. It used to be in the 60s, 70s, you could go out and preach and you would meet the, you know, there were born again Christians and they were a little tough. There were devout Christians and self-righteous Christians. This was in America. And you could preach to them. And then there were a lot of agnostics and atheists. And they were usually pretty good to preach to. And there was the odd, crazy person who had, just a completely concocted philosophy. And in fact, I remember before I joined, we used to get together with our friends. And, you know, we had a pharmaceutical business. And so we would test out some of our pharmaceuticals and then we would talk about God. And the conversation would go this way. And it could be never ending. We'd never come to any conclusion. But, you know, at least it was, maybe it was, I don't know if it was pious or not, but somehow we would talk about the meaning of life for a little while. Until we got tired of it, then we do some other stupid things. But nowadays, practically everyone you meet has got some bizarre concocted philosophy, which is a kitchery. It's a mishmash, a mixture, a goulash of all different kinds of things, and you don't know where you're going. You don't know what to deal with. The biggest bogus thing is people who say they're Buddhist. It's very popular now. Many, many people say that I'm reading the Dalai Lama's book or Dalai Lama. I met the gentleman. You know, someone asked Prabhupada about, what about Buddhism? And he said, oh, are you Buddhist? And the man said, no, I just was one to ask. And then Prabhupada gave him a full discharge of, if you want to talk about Buddhism, then be like Lord Buddha, go to the forest and meditate, don't talk to me. But, really, these people are, they have no idea about the philosophy. The philosophy of Buddhism is so shallow, if you look at it, if you're really interested. I mean, they have different tenets, and according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they have 9 basic ideas. And the last one is to be merciful towards others, compassionate. I think most people just pick up on that and say, oh, that's a good one. I'm a Buddhist, you know. They don't know what it means to be a Buddhist. You know, you sit around a roadside hitting a little box, which is symbolic of beating your brains out, or various other things. I was in Bangkok for about 3.5-4 months. There are many so-called Buddhists there. It's interesting, the Tibetan Buddhists different practice. Chinese Buddhists are, you know, no meat, no fish, no eggs, a few mushrooms, but you look at one of their tenets is that the creation is eternal. Therefore, there's no need for a creator. Makes sense. Creation is eternal. Therefore, there's no need for a creator. But then another one of their tenets is that nirvana or annihilation is the highest goal. So if the creation is eternal, how can there be annihilation? It doesn't make sense. Or well, that idea of compassion is also bogus. I can be compassionate to someone who is junior, but I, you know, Srila Prabhupada, I'd like to show compassion towards you today. You know, that was someone who's senior to me, how can I show compassion towards them? It's a relative term. It's not an absolute term. Like that, there's so many holes in their philosophy. But people don't really care. It's on a whim. They concoct any philosophy which will make them feel good. The time of feel-goodism. Forget austerity. People don't want that. So, competition. Well, it's inconceivable how Maharaj Prithu could be fighting with Indra, actually. Maharaj Prithu is a Shakti Avesha, incarnation of Krishna. But for our education, or even because he is a jiva soul, Dhruva Maharaj also exhibited very material qualities in the beginning. Envy, pride. There's many examples. Even in our own line, it's hard to see how the transcendence of everything, I mean, the transcendence of the path, the purity of the path. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, 6 months prior to his initiation, and we see him as a Manjari, you know, we see him as a very exalted personality, but just 6 months or a year prior to his diksha in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, he was a Shakta and, you know, eating different things. I don't know. I know he ate fish. I believe he ate meat also. So there's really a need for each and every one of us to individually meet Krishna. And I mean, there's a need for each and every one of us to make decisions it's good to make these decisions before you affiliate, before you take initiation, before you commit. But at any time, you do it before is better, that I know what the material world is. It's an illusory place where water seems like land and land seems like water, where there are various types of confusing things happening. And for me to plow, just like now you've got snow outside, well, we hope it doesn't go farther, but in New York, friend of mine's, no, he's in Canada, in Montreal, there's 3 feet of snow. So you want to get out of your driveway. There's snow plows. I guess you have them here. Once in a while you get snow here too, right? Not much? You're joking. Really? Oh, the global warming. Okay. You're getting benefit, huh?
5 minutes.
Really? Oh, no snow plows. Anyway, in Montreal, it's not changing. You need a snow plow. You need to plow your way out of your house. You need to plow through all of the confusion and fix yourself at the lotus feet of Krishna. No matter what people say, no matter what people do, there still is a conception of Krishna. People may have other conceptions. There's a myriad of different conjured conceptions, invented conceptions. This is an authorized description of the Absolute Truth. You can call it a conception. But whatever, you cannot find anything better. Nobody is going to offer you, no matter how hippie-ish or yuppie-ish or new age-ish or whatever, no matter how lovey-dovey, wishy-washy, appealing it may become, but it cannot compete with the knowledge which is being presented to us over thousands of years coming through the most brilliant men with pure hearts, completely free from lust, anger, and greed. We cannot find a better path to follow, and follow you must. Something you must follow. You will follow. It's not a question of choice. You will follow because Sarva Prakriti Jaragunai, the modes of material nature, there are impulses. You will act. You are not free. You will follow something or someone. So it's good to make a choice that come hell or high water, I'm going to remain fixed at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, because you will not find a better person, and I can tell you in every way, because he's just a very deep and loving person. He gave everything. He gave all his energy. He was completely renounced. And he didn't care for anything. He just cared for us, for humanity. He wanted to give. And therefore he labored tirelessly to produce these books and to see that they were distributed. And he knew that this would be the panacea. This would be the remedy to demystify, to clear the fog, to destroy the brain fog that people have. When you get some liver disease, like I've been through. I've been through some. I wish I would write a book, but wishing won't get it written. But anyway, I've been through some experiences which are just incredible. Maybe Mahabhu will write a book. I've been in a coma twice. For the last couple of years, I've been constantly in what veteran Hep C warriors call brain fog. You're there, but you're not all there, because you get ammonia encephalopathy, ammonia on the brain. Actually destroys the brain. So coming out of that fog is so sweet. I cannot describe to you. Recently I had some hope of, I guess, some hope of, I don't know, I need a miracle. And I got one miracle in my life. One very sure miracle. Malecha meets Paramahansa. That was a miracle when I met Srila Prabhupada. I don't know, I had no qualification. And so I had some type of, I don't know, mystical cure. But whatever it is, I got something back. The brain fog dissipated, and it was so nice. So you have to plow through. You have to be determined. You have to never take no for an answer. You have to just keep going. You have to be determined. Stick to the lotus feet, they can't be beat. And Srila Prabhupada will take you home. You try to follow the form, but the main thing is your heart. If your heart is fixed on Srila Prabhupada and service to him, if you give your life to him, he'll never cheat you. And I don't care what anyone says, because they have no experience. And I'm talking about some old friends of mine over here who may have tried to say otherwise about Srila Prabhupada, but they have no experience. And there's something that goes way beyond theoretical knowledge. And tips the balance. So, all I can say, with every drop of energy I have left, don't ever leave the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and you'll always be safe. Read his books, tell others about him. If nobody listens, I don't care. Because I was there when nobody was listening in the beginning. It's enough satisfaction for him. It can be a private love affair if that's what Krishna wants. But he's my life and soul. And you should make him your life and soul. And I'm sure you all do because you're all here after. There was the Gujarat earthquake and there was the Sweden earthquake, the Northeast Europe earthquake. But you survived, and that's great. And I worship all of you for your strength and courage. And thank you very much. Okay. You have to speak louder, I'm a little deaf.
I have a question.
Yeah. 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 I've heard that also. Well, for that matter, the Bible, you know, Jesus rejects his family members. That's the chance you take. There would not be any dissension if the Kauravas had just accepted their position and been humble. You know, there are so many things. There's one. Matrix or something. So this guy is walking into this lady's apartment and she says, "Watch out for the vase." And then he looks to see the vase and he knocks it over. And so she says, "The question is, if I hadn't warned you, would you have knocked over the vase or not?" You know, some kind of trick question. So, you know, you've got all these instructions in the Mahabharata. It's full of philosophy, but it's showing you how not to act. So, because you've got the, you know, like if you've got a new heater and it says, "Don't turn this switch," should you not have that sign there? Because that sign saying, "Don't turn the switch," might cause someone to turn the switch and your house would burn down. You know, the Mahabharata is full of instructions. I don't know why people, I think it's just superstition. There's a lot of superstition in India. India is, I've been there 29 years. India's been my base. And of course for many years that I was there constantly. 72 to well into the 80s. I didn't travel much. I know Indian culture very well, and that's not what we're glorifying. The last vestiges may be remaining in a few families who are traditional, but most Indians are what do you call them? Young crows. You know, they like the refuse more than old crows. Yeah, it's a strange thing, but still, Mahabharata is an exciting book. I've read it about 5 times. And I love it. great. Whose version?
Christian Darms.
Oh, Christian Darms. That's a great book. That's the best one I ever read. I read two other versions, and I read Krishna Dharma's twice. And it was, you know, I couldn't put it down. He does a good job. I didn't like his Ramayana so much, but the Mahabharata is super. Oh, in Croatian, because I was pushing it in Croatian. I told him why not to. Yeah, I told him, you've got to publish it. You've got to. Who's doing it? Yeah. Oh. Is it Vinita? I think Croatians will love it. Yeah. I know Russians will love it. I mean, they had Mahabharata there before there was an ISKCON. And one of the biggest selling places for Indian Hindi movies was Russia. Oh, yeah, they did. Well, I know they... Let me see. I know they broadcast a film that I made called Haridas Thakur. That was shown all over. He's doing it now in a different way.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know how you're going to mix the two.
But before he decided to do that, he translated
the I don't think you can miss with the Mahabharata because, you know, sex, violence, intrigue. Superstition. Tell them the Bible has so many things in it. Why do you keep the Bible in your house? Yeah, we have our Parthasarathi temple. People flock to that.
I never heard of that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I've never heard it directly from people, but I have heard that there is such a superstition. I mean, well, that the Mahabharata, no family will keep it in their house, no Indian family will keep it in their house because the energy from it, the vibrations, will create dissension in your household because Mahabharata is full of intrigue and dissension. Sure, people do keep Ramayana.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
And that's full of dissension. But Mahabharata's a little more famous. Yeah, that's true. There you go, the videos are there. B.R. Chopra's. Yeah. Yeah, and they sell those videos like anything. Everybody's got their kids watching that. And it's funny, the script writer was a Muslim. Yeah. And a scholar, so-called scholar. Yeah. I negotiated with him when he stole our pictures. Biar Chopra. We had to go over to his house. Can't do this. Yeah. Yeah. No, he's a good guy. Yeah. Well, we gave him the right to use our photos without any royalties, so. But he's a life member, and he's an old supporter of Prabhupada. Ramanand Sagar also. I was at the Muhurt shot in Gujarat of Krishna. He had the chief minister of Gujarat there and some other people. And of course he began the Ramayan, which started everything off. He began it right out of his house. You know, he hadn't made a hit movie in years, so he had no budget. So he was determined to do it. And in that way, he's kind of a, you know, nice person. They all know, met Prabhupada and used to see him on the beach in Juhu. They have the greatest respect for him. At least, ostensibly they do. Underneath, they have the greatest respect for their own minds. But that's India. I was totally underwhelmed. 1986, he came for the World Congress, the synthesis of science and religion in Bombay. It was like the cheap guest. And I don't know anybody who will eat cows and call themselves a Buddhist. I can't relate to. And I was just in Amsterdam with there was a television show, and it was independently, it was for educational TV, but he was producing cassettes. He had a little studio in his home. And he had employees and everything, but he would have all kinds of people over. Like 2 weeks ago, Salman Rushdie walked into his studio and, you know, he filmed him and had a talk. He's proud of his. He's not taken very seriously, but the people he interviews are pretty attractive or whatever. So his show does get watched, but he was telling me that he once asked the Dalai Lama a question, and he found this happened a lot with these type of people. He put them in a genre that, you know, you ask them a question and they don't really answer your question. They just go on talking about mind and this and that. You know, he finally said, wait, answer my question. Well, it's true. I guess somehow or other he has that kind of a personality, and well, he's definitely trained in Tibet. He was trained as a kid for years in a monastery, and they have pretty strict training. He's like the Pope, you know.
his whole life he's been a celibate monk. So you get some Shakti, there's no doubt about that. But he just, you know, ends up with the wrong equation. I mean, that, first of all, eating meat, I can't relate to that. I just, Buddhist, ahimsa paro dharma, you know. How are you going to justify it? It's all double talk. I don't eat meat. I do not not eat meat. You know, I follow the middle path. Well, you follow the middle path right to the middle of hell. That's what you do. I saw it in Thailand. Thais are very nice people. Wonderful. And in fact, Buddhism, in some respects, has kept their culture intact. They're very respectful towards monks. We rode everywhere in Bangkok free on the buses, and I went to a Stephen Covey seminar, you know, and they let me in free. And the girls, you go to a super...